Talk hard and enjoy the Mindgasm. The intellectual podcast starts now.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Intellectual Podcast. I'm your host, David S. Dawson, a filmmaker here in San Diego, California. And I appreciate you joining us from wherever you're joining us on all the different platforms that we're on now. Live streaming today on Saturday, April 15th. And if you are catching this on the replay or you're listening to the audio of the podcast, thank you for listening to The Intellectual. Your patronage is always appreciated. So to get today's episode off kind of quickly, I'm going to give a brief health update. As many of you who listen to this show regularly know, I've been on a bit of a health journey since about November when I found out that I have liver cirrhosis and celiac disease. And so I've been making all sorts of changes to my diet and my activity level and making progress. And I've got some, I got an image to share. I've been sharing images for a little while now. So let me pull that up. So there we go. On the right there is me in October at about 320 pounds. January, I was about 309. And here in April, I am hovering around 275. So you can kind of see the progression of how my face has changed pretty dramatically in the last 6 months or so. So things are going really well. I had a recent doctor visit, checkup. All my blood work came back really good. My A1C level's good. So diabetes is in check. My blood pressure was perfect. So things are going really well on that front. And I thank all of you for the support and the love that you've been sharing with me since I made the announcement of what's going on with me. But this episode's not about me. This episode is about our very special guest, a man who's been on the podcast in the past quite a while ago, though. And a lot of things have happened in my life since then. And I know a lot of things have happened in his life since then as well. So I'm going to bring him up. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my good friend, Dallas McLaughlin.
Oh, hey. Hi. Hello.
How's it going, bro?
It's going, dude. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm going to try a different format here. I don't like that. I don't like the wide boxes.
Oh, no.
It feels like we're really far away in the wide boxes.
Okay.
Well, now you're really close.
Yeah. It's the beard that does it. I'm sorry.
It's a lot of beard.
It's a lot of beard. It's a lot.
You didn't have that much beard the last time I saw you in person.
No,
and I think it was a different color then too.
it's definitely a different color. Yeah, that's the sad part about getting old is that the color drains literally from your face, right. As you get closer to death. If I'm far away from you, it can look like I just have a goatee. Like, that's how weird the color on the sides is.
Yeah.
I don't know if you do a lot of Zoom meetings for work?
Teams meetings, yeah.
Teams meetings. Okay, so for my work, we do almost exclusively Zoom, and we've been asked to blur our backgrounds.
Right.
Just kind of in uniformity, which is fine. But when I do that, the sides of my beard also keeps going blur in and out. It looks very weird. But yeah, I grew it out for a show. I was doing a show, a play at New Village Arts called The Ferryman. And they asked, and it was 1980s. We were in Irish countryside. And they said, just grow your beard out because you wouldn't really be shaving it, really. And I'm like, okay. And then it got really big. And then I started rehearsals for the next show, Jesus Christ Superstar at Moonlight, which will open in May. And the director was like, can you keep your beard? And I was like, okay. And meanwhile, my wife is like, she hates it so much. She wants it out of her life.
Yeah, you're kind of competing with Larry Poole's beard post-pandemic. His beard was super big.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I like it, though. I do like it.
Yeah.
I do like it being kind of unkempt.
Every time I've tried to grow mine, I get to a point, and I'm just like, I can't do this anymore.
It does get really annoying. I remember during the run of my show, The Ferryman, my daughter brought the stomach bug home from school. And I'll tell you, the only thing worse than having the stomach bug is having a stomach bug and a big, huge beard. because that is just an extra step of cleanup you didn't count on.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's not great.
So last time you were on the show, I believe we were, that was like on the tail end or during the run of Film in Diego on PBS, yeah. Right?
Well, we were promoting the show, so I want to assume that it was beginning or middle of the run of the show. But yeah, that was the last time. And that was, I think, 1994 was when we did that.
It's a little more recent than that. It's like 96, I think.
96. Maybe? Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. So Clinton was president. I remember that.
It's been like 7 years or something since you've been on the show. It weirds me out that I've been doing this program for that long. Like, this is the 10th year of the Intellectual Podcast.
That's so great, dude. Yeah, we did. I've been doing a sports podcast called The Kept Faith, and we started it in 2008.
Yeah. And I remember when you launched it.
We were, and it was back, and this is probably stands for you too, because this was back when like nobody really knew what a podcast was. You didn't really know how to tell people to listen to it.
Yeah. Had to educate. It's like radio on demand on your phone.
But you have to go through iTunes.
But you've got to do iTunes. And then they made a separate app for it, which further confused people.
And also sucks. It's not a great app. But yeah, it is like, it was such a weird trip to like where you started with podcasts. And then like now it's like, well, oh, you don't have a podcast? Well, that's weird. It's like everybody's
it was one of the things that landed me my new job. Like, they're like, oh, you do a podcast? I was like, yeah, I've been doing a podcast for like 9 years. I have over 300 episodes of interviews and stuff. They're like, we want to do a podcast here. I'm like, I can help you with that.
That's awesome. It is funny, like how there was a time, or like, oh man, maybe like 6 years ago, 5 years ago, where I had left the job I was at, and I started getting people asking me to help them build their podcast networks. Mm-hmm. Just because I'd been doing it for so long beforehand. Not that I was some like very famous podcast host, but I think it was just because they were like, oh, you've been doing it for a long time. Like, you know what you're talking about. And like, but everybody, and I'm sure you experienced this, everybody, these businesses will come to you and they'll be like, okay, we want to start a podcast. And you do it. And then the first episode runs and they're like, well, why didn't we get 1 million downloads? And you're like,
what? You have to build an audience. It takes time. Like,
they just don't get it. It doesn't make sense to them that they're not automatically trending.
And yeah.
It was the hardest thing I had to do was like educate businesses. I'm like, listen, you're not going to be famous right away. It's going to take you like a year probably to even get, you know, kind of well known. And they were like, oh, well, we'll just like pay for advertisement. I'm like, okay, all right.
And then they're like, why aren't we getting return on our paid for advertising?
It's just, it was kind of like one of those moments where I stepped back and I was like, I don't even know if I want a podcast anymore. Like, this makes me feel dirty. But I still do. It's like,
yeah, I went through a little period, towards the end of lockdowns and whatnot, where I was just like, I just don't have the energy. I don't want to do it. I don't feel upbeat enough. Every time I get on the camera, I'm just going to be like, so the world sucks today. I was like, I just don't want to do it anymore. And for the better part of a year, I think we did like 4 episodes.
Yeah, we did. I did a podcast for a long time, for years, about politics and like pop culture. And yeah, pandemic, we were like, what are we going to talk about? And then when it kept stretching on, like that we were at home, we're like, okay, well, let's do some episodes. And we did a couple episodes. And like, we had had an okay following, like very okay when it comes to like regional, let's put it that way. Right. And the amount of like vitriol and hate we got back, like never before. Yeah. We were like, oh, okay, this is dumb. We can stop doing this now. Like, why?
Yeah,
that's not what this is about.
I remember the very beginning of pandemic, we did a couple of episodes that were like parody episodes where, you know, I know a lot of actors, right?
So, yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, hey, why don't you come on and play Mitt Romney, you know, like riffing on stuff, you know? And like, we were doing those things and, oh man, what a mistake that was. I was like, I did like 3 of those and I was like, we're not doing that again. I don't want to go down that road.
Yeah, dude. People, and I think it was just because people had so much time on their hands. They were like, okay, well, I'm going to watch every minute. I'm going to listen to every second. and I'm going to have an opinion immediately about everything. It was, yeah. it was out of hand, but it was a nice break. I mean, we didn't do the sports phone because there was no sports, you know? So it was like,
right.
I was just podcast free for like a year, and it was very nice. It's very nice.
Your family enjoyed the extra time with you, I'm sure.
They got an extra hour every once in a while. It was great.
So, how has it been for you coming out of like, what was the weirdness of all that stuff as a comedian, like your new album that you've dropped, does it touch on any of that weirdness that we've gone through, or did you go like pandemic free on your post-pandemic album?
Well, you know, what's funny is like the pandemic, I think I was just talking to my buddy James about this a couple days ago, like, cause he's a touring comedian but makes his home in San Diego. And we were just kind of talking about comedy now. He just got back from Austin doing a week out there. And he was saying how it's so different there, the mentality of it. But how much the pandemic, like just completely the lockdown part of the pandemic anyway, completely like changed both of our lives. And I think it changed most people's lives in one way or another, but like, I was doing so much stand up, and I'll tell you, I did a show the day that Tom Hanks got it. Mm. The day that Tom Hanks got COVID. So this is before the lockdown, before it was like a pandemic for real.
Right.
But it was like that day where it was the day they shut down the NBA because like three people tested positive, and they're like, oh, holy crap. They shut it down. And then Tom Hanks came out and had it. And then I was doing a show that night. And on my way, my drive from where I live in Temecula. So on my drive from Temecula to downtown San Diego, where the show was, is about an hour. And I had shows booked for like 2 weeks after that. All of them were canceled in that hour. They were all canceled. Yeah. And it was like the world finally was like, wait, Tom Hanks has it? So this is real. Yeah, this is a real thing.
Suddenly it made sense to everybody. Like, oh, we're in trouble. Yeah. If it can get Tom Hanks, it can get anyone. Yeah,
man. Captain Phillips. So it was like... So I got to that show that night, and myself and some other, like a couple other comics, one of the comics that was hosting the show had just come back from Italy like 2 weeks before. And if you remember, like South Italy was just like riddled with COVID.
Yeah, just hammered.
And it was like that early COVID where people were just dying. Like there was like, the pure uncut COVID, as we call it.
Right.
And people at that time, nobody knew what was going on. So like we all kind of tried some COVID jokes, and they just all fell flat. Like no one was ready or prepared to laugh at it. And I never, from that moment on, I have been personally so like afraid to joke about it.
Right.
Because you're always going to be at a show. Right. And you're going to say, oh yeah, COVID, blah, 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 blah. And then somebody in the audience is going to be like, my mom died from COVID. And then your whole night's ruined and their life, like everybody's night's ruined. So I've just stayed away from it. There's a lot of comics who have found ways to make it funny and use material, but like, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The good comics, the really good comics, I think they know what they're doing with it, but I just don't. It's like most things. Like I just, when it comes to something that people can die from, I usually just stay away from it in general.
Do not touch.
Chances are someone knows someone that you're in front of that has died from that. But during the pandemic, I, you know, this whole storytelling thing, I've been doing it for, since before Film in Diego, I've been doing this storytelling thing with So Say We All, a group in San Diego. And I love it. It's like my favorite thing that I do outside of performing in theater. It's always been, I've always preferred it to stand up and anything else. Like it's just my favorite thing. And during the pandemic, there was no shows. People kind of found ways to do shows, like outdoor shows and shows. Like they're literally doing shows in parking lots where everybody was in their car.
Right.
Zoom shows, which I did one of those and it was a nightmare. It was just dumb. And I'm like, you know what? I also don't miss stand up right now. Like I don't miss doing it. I'm very happy not doing stand-up right now. And I was like, I have all these stories that I have audio of. And there was no way. And like, you know, my wife and I were in a very fortunate position to not need money. But everybody was getting those checks and stuff like that. So that helped. But like, you know, we had some money saved up, so we were okay. But we were trying to give back. We were trying to find ways to like help because my wife works in theater, and so all the theaters were shut down. So all the people that, you know, that were, she was in a management position, all the people below her, totally out of work. They had like no safety nets built up really. So it was like, well, how can we help these people? And people like them because there's, you know, thousands and thousands. So I was like, well, let me put out my old album, which was a stand-up album, and then I'll just donate the whatever happens. I'll, you know, whatever I get, I'll just donate that to whatever works, you know, whatever charity or person or whatever. And then it became a way of how can we tack on and start building that up. And so then I was like, well, why don't I put out these stories as an album? You know, what are they? They're not doing anything. So I'll just take them and put them out as an album. It's what I want to do anyway. Just do stories. So it's a good step. So I put out my first album last year, called Rough Drafts, which is my first storytelling album. And then, and it did really well. I was very excited about the reception to it. And so we started working on the second album, and the stories are all from the past decade of me telling stories. So there's a couple here that are more recent on this album, like in the last year or so. And then there's like one that I tell about doing radio that's from like, I think like 8 years ago or 7 years ago. So like the audio quality differs from like when people cared about recording these to when they didn't. And it's a very interesting trip down memory lane, but I didn't have any COVID storylines or anything like that. It just, it would be interesting to write about it, but I feel like people are just so angry about it. Like any position you take, somebody's going to, you know, call you a sheep or, you know what I mean? Like
sheep or, you know, part of the deep state or.
Yeah, exactly. You're QAnon. I'm like, I don't. Yeah. So I've stayed away from all of that and tried to make my albums like a place where people can kind of just enjoy what they're hearing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like instead of controversy, like there's just some fun jokes and stories. And
well, you know, a lot of people kept saying, you know, after the Spanish flu, you had the roaring 20s, you know, where everybody was partying and drinking and,
yeah,
you know, doing just letting loose. And I'm like,
yeah,
I kind of understand.
<You know>? Yeah.
Like after all the craziness, all you want to do is just like not worry about stuff.
Dude, well, it's like, it's kind of like everybody goes through like a collective near-death experience.
Yeah.
And then you come out the other end and you're like, well, I'm not going to die that way, man. Let's go nuts. Cocaine? Hell yeah. Like, just have some fun, man. Yeah. It's been an interesting trip. I mean, during that for my comedic career, I still do some comedy. I'm headlining a show Wednesday night at Pally Wine Co. in Little Italy, which will be fun. It's always a fun show, but like, I just don't do much stand up anymore. It's not where my heart is. And this storytelling stuff, it's kind of taken its place and it's just been so much fun. And when I sit down to write, I mean, I know you've written a lot too. Like when I sit down to write, like I don't write in joke stand up form. Like I never have.
Right.
So like when I sit down to write, it's like I'm writing narratives, you know, and that's where my brain goes.
I think a lot of the best stand-up comics, that's really what they do, is they tell stories that are funny.
Yeah.
You know, when I think back on Robin Williams and I think of Steve Martin and, you know, even, you know, Bill Cosby back when he was funny and you could talk about him, you know, they told stories, you know, and the stories were relatable and within them was all of the essence of comedy. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't joke telling, you know? And I think joke telling is a very specific, you know, type of comedy, but I don't think it's easily sustainable for like an hour on stage, you know?
Yeah. It is like, you know, there are some, storytelling has really crept into stand up a lot in the last like 6 years, 7 years. Like Mike Birbiglia has kind of like broken through. And when he started getting very popular for his, you know, storytelling shows, like you said, like it's like an hour of these beautiful stories. And he was a stand-up and a joke writer for years and years. And And so when he did it, I was like, oh, like there's somebody that is doing this. So I'm not insane for thinking that this works. And like, and he's, you know, so wonderful at it. And it's kind of like his, not necessarily his career, but what he's been able to do is kind of what I've been aspiring to do and kind of do it in a little bit of a different way. Like he's very clean cut NPR. And I'm not, these are not insults whatsoever. I know they're sounding like him, but he's kind of like that, a little bit more of a mainstream storyteller. You know, my whole existence in life has been based in like punk music and kind of the underground and, you know, shucking authority and all that stuff. So it's like, how do we make storytelling like accessible for that audience and that crowd? And So Say Whale themselves have done a great job with that at Whistle Stop and their other venues that they do stuff at. So it's like, how do we harness that and like bring it around? And that's what I'm hoping to kind of accomplish as we move into this next year and see what happens. I don't know if it'll work, but Bill Cosby was a great story. I mean, it's hard because, you know, we're not supposed to like him, which is fine. I don't think we have to like him, but like,
dislike the man, but recognize that the art at the time was
his, like, you know, himself, fun. Bill Cosby himself is one of the great comedy records of all time. And you're right. Like it is pretty much just, you know, 20 minute story after 20 minute story.
Yeah. And the thing for me is always remembering him being in charge of his kids and then convincing him that chocolate cake was good for them.
Dude, dad is great. You gives know? Us the chocolate
dad
cake.
Dad is great. Gives us the chocolate cake. Yeah. You know, as a kid, that killed me.
It's like, I mean, it's the age old thing. I mean, because people are doing it with Chappelle now, you know, where Chappelle's going through it because he's just, for whatever reason, not just continuing to, you know, make his jokes about the trans community and all that stuff. And listen, I'm not here to bash Chappelle because I look back at Chappelle and go, his first two stand-up specials are two of the best stand-up specials that have ever been put out ever. Yeah. And it's hard to look back and go, no, I can't like those now because of his views now,
right?
You know, which like, it's hard to do. Like that's such a slippery slope. Like,
yeah. Well, even like the kids who grew up on Harry Potter are having the same issue, right? Like,
I mean, my wife was a humongous Harry Potter fan.
Yeah.
And has been so disappointed in Rowling and sold most of our Harry Potter stuff that we had. She sold it off. She has a tattoo on her arm. It's like her whole forearm. It's all a stack of books, and every book is like her favorite author. And one of them was J.K. Rowling. So she got the trans flag tattooed over her name. But like, it's hard for them. And I get why. I get why people have a difficult time for it. I would never be like, well, that's stupid. Like, no, you think what you want to think. That's my thing. It's like, don't listen to them. Don't read the thing. Don't support what you don't want to support. Like, that's totally your call. But at the same time, like for me, I'm not going to say, well, Dave Chappelle was never funny. Like there's people that do that. And I'm like, yeah, that's just not true.
Like, I mean, he wasn't my cup of tea, you know?
Yeah.
But I got why other people thought he was really funny, you know? But I mean, in the end, artists are people and they're fallible. And I think you can separate yourself from the artist after you discover they're a terrible person.
Yeah.
But still think back fondly to the entertainment that you got before you knew that, you know, like, I don't think you have to say, well, it ruined my childhood, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no, it didn't. Your child is still there. Your memories of that are still there. It's tainted a little bit, you know, by the fact that you realize this person's like a horrible SOB, but it doesn't change the fact that you were, you know, wickedly entertained. And in the case of like Harry Potter, that you learned a lot of really good life lessons from those stories, you know, like it doesn't change that part of your experience.
Totally.
It's like going through a divorce, you know, like, well, I hate this person now, but I was married to them for 20 years and we've got three kids. And, you know, I try and focus on the fond memories while no longer being married to that person. That's okay. It's okay to not be married to them now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change the fact that you had, you know, 15 years of really wonderful time and three beautiful kids and, you know, and a legacy that's going to go forward regardless of who this person's become now, you know?
And I get people who go like my wife, you know, she wanted to get rid of the Harry Potter stuff. And for her, it was because when she started looking back at those things, it was no longer a look back at like positive memories. It was a look back at like what's happening now. I understand that. I understand you can have negative associations with things. So like, again, I get whatever, however anybody wants to take it, that's totally up to them. But like, Louis C.K. is another example, you know, like when it comes to, I mean, listen, comedians for the most part, kind of terrible people. And it's because
you said it. I didn't say it.
I am fine with saying it. Like I was for years, I was like a sloppy drunk who was an asshole to everybody. And it was mainly because I would just go out and do comedy, get loaded, you know, and then hang out and eat burritos until 3 a.m. And then, you know, if you were around me during then, I was probably going to make fun of you. And it's a lot of people took it the wrong way. You know, you made a lot of poor decisions in those moments.
Right.
And comedians, it's like for the most part, like look at the comedian. Most part, comedians are dorks. They're idiots. Like, and so now all of a sudden you get to be famous and in control. Like you probably beat up your whole life in high school. And then now you get to be the boss on stage. Like you get that power. Like they're going to make terrible, terrible choices and decisions and not know what to do with that power. Yeah. So like, I know that because I was one and around comics and still am, I guess, and around comics all the time. So I look at those things as like terrible decision-making, horrible decision-making, ruined lives, not a good person. It helps that they put out specials like Chappelle and Louis C.K. I think their last few specials were pretty bad. Like I didn't think they were actually that good. So that helps. But at the same time, like I can't look back and tell you Louis C.K.'s special hilarious was bad because he's a terrible person. Like it's not bad. It's one of the greatest stand-up specials that's ever been released. So it's like, and what it did is it changed the game and changed comedy for a generation of people who now come up and like take that torch, you know, where they wouldn't have had that, you know, wouldn't have had that inspiration. So there are a lot of positives that can come out of it. It's just unfortunate that the biggest negative is the person themselves. You know?
Yeah. The person's a miserable cuss, but the art remains.
Yeah. Like think about how many good books or good entertainment and art has come from these kids who grew up on Harry Potter. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like they have released so much positivity into the world because they loved Harry Potter. And so it's like, you just have to kind of weigh it out where it's like, yeah, it sucks that the person who created it is just a unabashed kind of weirdo. But like at the same time, like the legacy that they probably unintentionally left is overwhelmingly positive. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's my thought. I'm probably going to get hate comments from people.
Well, you know, hate comments are fine. it's the name of the game. It's the internet. While you were saying that, it was kind of dawning me. It's actually very similar to the kind of national discourse about, you know, do we hate America because America had slavery? Do we hate America because we did terrible things over and over again, but we also like have done amazing things? And just because we have a terrible history doesn't mean we can't have a bright future. And it's like, do we learn from those things? That's the biggest question for me always is like, do we learn and do we grow and do we evolve or do we keep repeating the sins of the past? That for me is always the biggest question.
Yeah, I mean, history is always going to repeat itself, to me, it's
anybody
like
anybody who actually studies history knows that it's a roller coaster.
It always comes back around, but like you said, I think the question is when it does come back around, who are we as a people responding to it? You know, how much different do we look at it? Yeah, I mean, I honestly, as we're sitting here, you know, streaming on YouTube and to podcasts and all that stuff, you know, I'm a firm believer that social media is probably the thing that has taken us down more than anything else.
It certainly made it harder to disquiet things, you know?
Well, yeah. And it's like,
it's just because everybody's got a platform. Everybody's got a voice.
My buddy Zoltan, who's a stand-up comedian and one of my favorite stand-ups. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have started with him at the same time, but even if I didn't have that relationship with him, he would be one of my favorite standups. He's just brilliant and wonderful. He had a bit that he did a couple of years ago that I think he put on one of his specials, but it's like, he talked about he had this mechanic that he would always go to. There was this mechanic that he always went to, and the mechanic was this guy Chris, and he was like, oh, you know, like Chris and him got along great. Like he loved talking to Chris. They'd show up and they would just talk about cars for, you know, 10 minutes and they have this like really nice cordial relationship. It was great. And he's like, and then I go home and Chris, you know, friended me on Facebook. He's like, I accept Chris's friendship. Why not? Sure. It's Facebook, whatever. He's like, come to find out, Chris might be a Nazi. He's like, he's like, now I can't talk to Chris when I go see Chris because I know this information about him. And he's like, and his whole thing is like, maybe we're not supposed to all know each other. You know what I mean? Like maybe, maybe we're just supposed to have the friends we have and that's it. And I yeah. like, I think that I like, it's a joke, but it, to me, it's real.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, I went to visit, you know, one of my school friends. I went to go visit his house and there was a China hutch filled with Nazi plates and, you know, Nazi forks and Nazi teacups and swastikas on, you know, like, and I remember just being like, hey, it was beautiful. Like all the stuff was beautiful. And
yeah,
I was just kind of mesmerized by how beautiful it was. I didn't know what a Nazi was yet. You know, like
sure.
I had not yet watched Indiana Jones. <You know>? And I remember going home and telling my parents about it. And, you know, my mom, Filipino, my dad, white guy, you know, my dad was like, what did this stuff look like? You know? And I'm like, well, I had this really cool like symbol on it. And I drew the symbol out. My dad grabs the paper and like tears it up, throws it away and goes, you're never going to that house ever again.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And you know, it was just like 10 houses down the street, you know, here in California.
Oh, well, if you were in Santee, I could buy it.
It was up in Santa Maria, but it's about the same difference. Man. But, you know, we had moved to California because my dad wanted to get away from that sort of stuff with his mixed race children, you know. But But it's kind of always around. It's in the background.
It's always around, man. You know? Like, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the thing is it's like. Like, you know, as you get older, you know, you lose friends. It just kind of naturally happens. People move or whatever. They die. And you're kind of like, I don't need all of like, I just don't need it constantly in my face. Like, it's a drug. You know what I mean? It's like, it gives you that dopamine rush. So I'm constantly checking my phone. And now that I have kids, you know, I'm like, my 9-year-old, she's on her iPad all the time. And I'm like, and then I'll like look at her and be like, why are you on your iPad? And then I look back at my phone, you know? So I'm like, oh, I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
It's tough, dude. And it like, you're constantly comparing yourself to other people. You're constantly getting jealous. You're constantly getting mad at whatever somebody posts. It's just like, I don't think as humans, we were meant for that kind of an onslaught of information and emotion. And yet we constantly do it to ourselves.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, it's made America a terrible place. However, it's, you know, the internet is everywhere. So,
yeah, I mean, the thing for me is like, and I've said it a few times, like I've traveled this country a lot, right? Like I was a roadie and I drove gear as well as just doing the shows. So, you know, I've been in backwoods America a lot for 25 years. And I did not always feel safe everywhere I went and trying to explain that to people. You know, I didn't really recognize that I was colored until I was an adult traveling the country alone.
Yeah. You know?
And suddenly, why are these people looking at me weird? You know, I'm just pumping my gas. And it took me a little while to kind of figure all that stuff out. But there is a lot of that across the country and really around the world. And I think prior to the internet, it was kind of easy for a lot of people to just pretend it was gone, you know, or that it was truly a minor number of people. But I think the reality is it's a lot more people than people have ever wanted to admit to. And
I mean,
and I think the internet has just made it really easy for them to kind of say, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
You're going to hear me.
Well, and it's like, you know, it's finding because of the algorithms and stuff, they find each other.
Yeah.
And so their groups grow, and it's
instead
like
of being solitary people, voices in the woods, they're
exactly
they're a mass of people now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird, it's definitely a weird time.
Yeah.
So while it's you're on the internet, go buy my album, I Didn't Start the Fire and Other Lies.
Yes.
On
yes.
Bandcamp.
Here we go.
Yeah. Oh, look at that.
We do have a clip. Do you want to, set up the clip for people?
Oh man.
Do you remember which clip you sent me?
I think I sent you something from the Steve Martin story, I think.
I think that sounds right.
I think that's right. Well, if it's from the Steve Martin story, I would
we can just surprise ourselves and
we can
play
just surprise
it.
Ourselves. How about we play it and then I'll talk about it. I'll post, I'll run it back, as we used to say.
Here we go. This is a clip from I Didn't Start the Fire and Other Lies.
Norm got his light, letting me know he was wrapping up and I'd have to go give the end of the show announcements. When the club manager burst in the room and said five words I'll never forget as long as I live. Steve Martin just walked in. I laughed it off as some kind of weird joke. But then he followed it up with, Steve Martin just walked in and Paul Simon is parking the car. The second sentence somehow made this whole thing much more believable. As if I'd always known Paul Simon was the better driver or something. I mean, Paul Simon and Steve Martin were best friends. They had strong SNL ties. Norm was on SNL, so this whole... Wait, Steve Martin is here? The manager assures me this isn't a joke. And before I have time to react, I hear Norm say goodnight. So I hustle out on stage to say my goodbyes and drive safes, and I immediately start scanning the audience for Paul Simon and Steve Martin. The lights come up, and sure enough, there they were sitting in the very back. These days, it's almost impossible to tell someone that someone is the greatest or that something is literally the best ever because it's such a saturated proclamation. However, what I'm about to say contains no use of hyperbole and no measure of exaggeration within. Steve Martin is the reason I started performing on stage. He was the sole motivation for me to be in front of someone else and make them smile. When I was 10 years old, I saw Three Amigos and I peed my pants. When I was 12, I saw L.A. Story, and it blew my mind that someone could write, direct, and star in a movie all at once. When I was 14, I saw The Jerk, and for the first time ever, understood what I wanted to do with my life. If Norm was the vice president of comedy, then Steve Martin was Abraham goddamn Lincoln. He was the man who changed the game and shaped everything that followed. If I was ever seriously dating someone, she would have to watch My Blue Heaven. And if she didn't laugh at least once, she was taken out of consideration as a life partner. That's not a joke.
It was the Steve Martin story. All right, good, good.
That's great, man.
Thanks, dude. Thank you. Yeah, I had you brought up Steve Martin a little bit ago, and he's like, you know, he kind of means everything to me when it comes to comedy and entertainment. And it was the biggest trip of my life to be hanging out already with Norm Macdonald, who was like one of my stand-up heroes, like being able to perform with him all weekend long. It was like, he was the coolest guy ever. So nice. Would talk to me about comedy the entire time. Talk to each other about our jokes. Like he wanted input on his jokes. He would give me tags for my joke. Like he was just a genuine, sweet person. So I was already like, this weekend can't get better. and then yeah, Steve Martin shows up and Paul Simon with them and Edie Brickell I mean, listen to the whole story. We end up hanging out for a little while and then I kind of get into a weird conversation with Paul Simon. It's a really
Paul Simon for me still has one of the best SNL appearances skits of all time with the turkey suit.
Oh, the turkey suit is a great
that bit is so funny, and he does it so deadpan, so straightforward.
he also turkey suit, and then the basketball thing where he plays basketball against, I want to say it's Dr. J, but I can't remember who he's playing basketball against. But it was crazy about him is Lorne Michaels like wanted him to be a cast member. Like he was trying to get him to be a cast member.
I can see that.
Yeah. You see those sketches and you're like, he is unbelievably funny. Like
comedy gold, man.
Yeah, dude. He definitely, his whole point in that story was basically how much he didn't want to be there. And it was really, really funny how he acted out because of it. But yeah, that was I still consider it one of the best nights of my life. I rank it top five because I can't necessarily put it above when my daughters were born. But but I refuse to give the listed top five. I just say it's at my top five.
It's a fluid top five.
Too fluid. Yeah, it's always changing. We might have another kid. Who knows? But yeah,
That's hilarious.
It's on the album, which is only available on Bandcamp right now. I know that is a bummer for some people, but it'll be out on iTunes soon and all the other stuff. But right now you can only get it on Bandcamp, which is a great platform for artists.
Yeah, Bandcamp's a wonderful platform.
I mean, last year when I put up my first album out, my first album is available on iTunes. If you want to get one of the storytelling albums, please go do it. It's on iTunes and Amazon and Tidal and all that stuff. Not Spotify. Spotify does not support comedians or spoken word albums. They
don't want to conflict with the hundreds of millions of dollars they poured into podcasts.
Well, it's really weird, dude. Like they started doing that. I don't even get it most of the time, but like they are basically, how musicians have like, you know, they put up a song and they have like rights to that song. So you can't just take that song and do whatever you want with it. Right.
Right.
Well, Spotify basically did not give that same, grace to comedians. And so they literally just take comedians like tracks and use them for whatever they want without ever paying or asking or anything. And So comedians were finding out about this going, hey, wait a minute. And then Spotify was like, yeah, well, we're not going to pay you anything. So we'll just take your stuff off the platform. So they literally won't put stuff on the platform, right now. It's kind of crazy, but somebody, when I was going through that last year, when it was like, I couldn't, there was a weird thing about Apple Music and all that stuff. Somebody was like, dude, just put it up on Bandcamp. And I knew of Bandcamp, but I didn't have any of my stuff on there. So I did it. And within like the first 2 days of having it on Bandcamp, I made more money than I'd made in 4 years on Spotify. And I'm like, wait, why am I not just doing Bandcamp?
Because you're cutting out the middleman, right? Like,
well, it's that. And the platform doesn't sink millions of dollars into podcasts. It's purely a platform for musicians to put their music into the world. And that's all its function is.
Yeah. Even my nephew, while he was in high school, he was learning to mix music and, you know, do that techno DJ thing. And he put a number of his electronic dance music and stuff up on Bandcamp. And I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And like, there's the app and all the other stuff you can use for some people. I mean, it's just a different step for people, but as I did with the last one, and as I'm doing with this one, I'm letting them sit there as I, you know, there's this one again, there was an issue with Apple Music and the release date. It happens every single time with the platform that I use for distribution is called TuneCore. And I feel like every single time I've put anything out on them, there's always a problem and it doesn't make any sense. So this will be my last album that ever is put out on TuneCore. I'll be moving to a different platform. But in the meantime, I'm like, well, I'll just let it sit on Bandcamp because that was, you know, that helped out last year. Like, you know, so I know it's not the easiest thing for people to track down, but it really is much more beneficial to the artist. And instead of getting 10 cents per stream from Spotify.
Yeah, well, it's like doing Patreon as a podcaster, you know.
Exactly.
You could get some pennies from advertising on your podcast. Or you could do Patreon and let the people who genuinely enjoy your content, you know,
yeah,
pay you for it.
Yeah, I mean and you can pay, I think the album is $7 on Bandcamp and you can pay more if you want. You don't have to, but I get like the lion's share of that $7, you know? And so it's a very user, fairly user friendly, but very much artist friendly.
Yeah.
So that's where it'll sit for right now. And I appreciate the people who already went and bought it. It was very nice of them. Yeah, the other thing about Bandcamp is you can go on, you can listen to it for free a couple of times, which is really good for musicians because if you're like, oh, I really like that song, I get to hear it for free. Oh man, my free plays are up. Now I'm going to go back and buy it. It's a little harder for storytellers because you're like, oh, I just listened to that 12 minute story. I really like that. Cool. And then you can move on. It's not necessarily like, not, you know, you're not going to be singing along.
Equal. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I get a lot of people who send me like, oh man, I'm listening on Bandcamp. And I'm like, I know you didn't pay for it yet. That's okay.
I got the stats. I know I'm not getting paid.
That's all right. Enjoy
thanks for listening.
Yeah. Hopefully though, when they, you know, Apple Music does do a better payout than Spotify. So hopefully when it's out on Apple Music, they'll, you know, they'll just add it to their library and I'll get a couple cents from that. But
yeah, it's harder to get on Apple's platforms than a lot of the rest. I'm going through that with the feature film that I've been editing. Like, it's been notes after notes after notes from the distribution company. Like, oh, you need to fix this and you need to work on the audio on this scene. And like, Apple won't approve this if it's not cleaned up. And it's just on and on and on and on.
It's so weird to me. It's like, unless I have like, unless I have a swastika on the cover, what are you trying to review here? Like, just put it up. Like, you're going to make money off of it.
I'm like, at this point, people know the difference between an Apple TV Plus branded Apple program and just something they're hosting. You know,
it's like, exactly. Exactly. Come on. Yeah, their review process has gotten fairly convoluted.
Yeah. But I mean, Apple's always been Apple, and they're the highest profiting company in the world today. So they must be doing something right.
Dude, I remember when we first started putting our podcast out and they had to go through a review process and it could be like weeks.
Oh yeah. It could be weeks. To get your podcast approved. Yeah.
And then like now I put out a new podcast and it's like the next day it's up and I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah, dude, it is very strange. An app developer the first couple of years of the App Store too. And it was the same thing with the apps. Like you would take months building your app. You'd build it. You'd submit it to them for approval for the App Store and no idea how long it would take.
Yeah.
Like the first app we submitted took something like 16 weeks to get approved.
Yeah.
And every time you did an update, you submit the update and then you just wait. It could be 3 or 4 weeks for the update to get approved. You know, dude, I know it's not like, that long now, but back in the day, you know, they were adamant. They're like, this is a new platform. We only want stuff going up that, you know, isn't going to break the phones.
And then they were like, oh, well, we can just make money on whatever. So here you go.
Yeah. So, well, Dallas, it's been awesome catching up with you, man. And, you know, I'm glad you made it through pandemic okay. And
you too, man. Okay. And I was hearing your health update and I'm happy that you're getting healthy. That's awesome.
Well, it is fortunate that my new job is at a health center. So, you know, I'm surrounded by people who are like, you know, you should probably go talk to the doc.
Yeah.
Really? You think I should? I'm all right. They're like, how old are you? 47, 48. Yeah, you should go talk to your doctor.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I get that. I have a doctor's appointment on Tuesday. Cause I gotta, you know, make sure that I'm not dying quicker than I thought. Yeah. And, it gets crazy when you get old, but that's why I'm happy to hear it, man. Like taking care of yourself is like the biggest thing that people can do.
I should be job one, right?
Should like, be job one. Physicals, mental health.
Your body's your spaceship through the universe. Like,
yeah, there's so many people I meet who are just like miserable. And I'm like, well, have you talked to a doctor? And they're like, no.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
okay, well, good luck.
This pain in here for months. You know, I had nothing I do can get rid of it. Have you seen the doctor about it? Oh, no, man. They're going to tell me something's wrong.
It's going to cost like, me like $20.
I think your body's telling you something's wrong already. Maybe you'll find a solution.
Well, good.
The thing
for
me is I wasn't actually feeling bad. I'd noticed that my weight had been going up and I hadn't really, you know, I'm a vegetarian, so, you know, it's not like I'm eating like high fat foods or anything. And
yeah,
I was like, what is going on? And, you know, my dad died early, my mom died young. And, so I just went into the doctors and I was like, hey guys, you know, I don't like the trend line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
So why don't we do something about it and let's take a look. And you know, I advocated very hard for myself. And
that's
and,
good. That's the most important thing.
And yeah, you know, ended up, I do have some problems and some serious problems, to be honest. And I fortunately on the liver cirrhosis side of it, I caught it very early. So
that's great, dude.
I have just crossed into the threshold of liver cirrhosis. So if I can lose all this weight this year, I'm hoping to get down to about 220 by the end of the year, which will be 100 pounds lost.
Yeah.
If I can get down to that, you know, then what I can do is basically kind of halt the progression of what's going on with my liver and its tracks. And
well, you can do it. As somebody who lost a lot of weight, to somebody who's doing the journey now, you can do it, dude.
Yeah, everybody, you did it yourself recently.
I did. Yeah, I mean, it's been a couple of years now, but yeah, I dropped about 80 pounds.
I remember seeing the photos and going, damn, look at that.
Yeah, dude, it's just one of those things where you kind of like you're doing. You just got to get in front of it, and then you go, oh, wait, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like, you can do it. Most people can.
So much of it's just mental. Like, you have to make the decision that you're going to do something and do it.
I'll be in L.A. Tomorrow. Actually, I'm telling a story in L.A. at Bar Lubitsch. And the story I'm telling is about my, like, weight loss and, like, basically what it took for me to get there, which was, like, almost having a heart attack and, you know, and going, like, wait, I'm in my 30s. late 30s, but still, like, I should not be dying of a heart attack at this point in my life. So it's that thing, listening to your body and just mental block. Got to get through it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kevin Smith, you know, had a massive heart attack.
Kevin Smith, man.
Yeah. Right after doing stand up.
Yeah.
In between sets.
That'll do it.
Had a Widowmaker, managed to survive it. Have you seen him lately? He lost like 120 pounds or something.
I follow him on Instagram.
He looks great. You know, so I look at it and I go, look, if Silent Bob can freaking handle this, I can do it too.
You can do it, dude.
So
you're already doing it. You're already making it happen.
Yeah, I'm 50 down, so I'm about halfway there.
That's awesome, dude. So.
Well, the hard part comes on now, though. Now I got to start exercising. I've done this far with diet and Ozempic. Yeah.
I remember hitting a plateau at some point, and the person who was helping me kind of get my diet under control, she was like, okay, well, start doing some like light exercise, you know, that'll kind of get you over the hump. And I was like, I don't want to.
That sounds like work. I don't want
to. I already did the hard part, right?
Yeah.
Can I not do that?
I'm not surprised that I plateaued here, though, because I was comfortably in the 270s for like 10 years.
Yeah.
So my body just like hit this spot and just went, oh, this is nice. We remember being here.
Dude. It's like, you know, even for me, I found walking just was a nice.
Yeah.
I still do it every day. I try to get my 10,000 steps in, but even that like really helps, man. Just those little things, getting your motor running.
Parking on the far side of the parking lot.
Yeah, you're damn right.
all the little things.
My wife and kids hate it, but every time I go to Target or anything, I park in the very back. They're like, I'm like, sorry. Like,
you just string together a whole lot of little bits of exercise throughout the day. It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
All right, well, brother.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on, and anybody who's still with us after that riveting weight loss talk.
We do have five people watching.
They're not in the chat,
but they're watching.
That's okay. Go to Bandcamp, DallasMcLaughlin.bandcamp.com. You get my old albums there, my new albums there. I Didn't Start the Fire, Other Lies. Please pick it up. You'll enjoy it.
All right, man. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody who's been following along. Like I said, five of you have been consistently here. We've been going up and down.
Thank you, five.
through the show. But
all it takes is five.
Consistently here. And again, for everybody who's joining us in the replays, make sure you check out Dallas's album on Bandcamp. And thank you so much for listening to the Intellectual Podcast. If you're listening on a podcast platform, hit the little subscribe button or the plus button or whatever the button is that allows you to subscribe to the show so that you get the notifications when new episodes drop. If you've been watching us on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, do all the likes and subscribey things there as well. So that you don't miss any future episodes. Try to do them on Saturdays because that's easier for me with my schedule now that I'm a working stiff. But we sometimes go out surprisingly on a weekday evening. It just depends a little bit on when our guests are available and when they want to come on and chat. But we appreciate you following along, and we hope to catch you on the next set of episodes. Until then, Dallas, thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
Audience, thank you. I'm David Dawson. This is the Intellectual Podcast. Thanks for joining.
Hello there, citizens. I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the floaty that will not flush no matter how many times you try in the toilet bowl of crime. I am Darkwing Duck. Telling you, please, talk hard and enjoy the mindgasm. Whatever the heck that means. After all, you are watching Intellectual Podcast with your ears.